really enjoyed this part of the conversation with Tim Kring, because we get into talking about a big pitch for Universal Studios and how you could leverage a massive piece of IP like the Bourne Identity to make more of it, to deliver more value to fans, but also to tend to that as a brand and make that brand come alive. He shares some great insights into Star Wars and Star Trek and how those brands became such mega successes. But what I really enjoyed out of this was that as we were talking, chucking around a few ideas, he kind of let it slip that what we're trying to achieve with Forever Has Fallen is the holy grail of transmedia storytelling, meaning that we're creating something that you can actually live in, that you live in the story, and that the story is living on all these different platforms. And being able to achieve something like that has, for a story, because, you know, transmedia has been used a lot with different marketing schemes and different marketing programs. But to actually try to have a blockbuster story where you enable people to live within this story world, and that story world is spread out across all these different platforms, that's been quite tricky. And to hear someone like Tim let us know that what we're achieving, one, is very, very challenging, and I can definitely attest to that. But two, to know that we've come so far and achieved so much within such a short time, where others have tried and failed with much greater resources, that felt really, really satisfying.
The idea, I think, is to think about your audience as, you know, rather than big data, sort of big audience. You're trying to get engagement, and the KPIs of it are not just about passive viewing. The KPIs are about footsteps, about fingerprints, about, you know, taps on the phone, about, you know, so there's a lot of ways to sort of prove or to build kind of KPIs around engagement in especially when brands are involved.
Well, see, that's the thing is, a lot of the successful transmedia projects have been brand driven, marketing things.
Yep. And I've done a couple of really big ones that were just that.
Yeah. And so commercially successful from the point of view, I mean, there was the stuff that you did with Nokia, for example.
Yeah. Conspiracy.
And Nokia loved it because it delivered what Nokia was looking for. But to create a story, if we were to say to create a piece of entertainment, which was like, let's call it a blockbuster, to say, okay, now let's make a blockbuster production, which is wildly successful. You know, something like, you know, the Bourne Identity, for example, and then introduce a transmedia experience across that and involve the audience, and where the audience participates and dives into the world, and they have all these things. Do you see any hurdles to being able to commercialize something like that?
Well, I mean, I actually think that there's a
because
real...
it's a very different production model, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, but I do think that those IPs that people love are actually really ripe to do exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, you take the Bourne series and you think about it as a geolocative game where you are... have to do dead drops and you're following people on the street and CCTV cameras are supposedly following you, and you could create an entire world around that could be really, really fun. And that could be in-game purchases, that could be a subscription model, that could be or imagine a Universal that owns that property could gamify the theme parks so that the second that you walk in the game, into the theme park, you are being you know, you have an assignment to do and your phone lights up with it, you know, and there's a way for, I mean, to me, that's a no-brainer that somebody like Universal should do something like that with that property, because Universal has these theme parks. And one of the big challenges with the theme park is how do you entertain people when they're not, while they're standing in line for 30 minutes to do a 7-minute ride, you know? It's how to get people to entertain each other and while they're in a park. And it seems to me like an absolute perfect pitch to them to pitch it around one of their IPs. So that's what I would say about that. I just think that, you know, there are
suddenly there's a lot of people calling up Universal saying, "Hey, I've got a really good idea."
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, there are ways to, look, in this whole transmedia sort of nut is a tough one to crack because somebody has to be willing it has usually been sort of ancillary content that drives off of an existing property, whether it's a big marketing for a movie or the ancillary content on a television show. And the problem with it for the executives who have to write the check is, you know, and I've heard this actually many, many versions of this comment before, but, you know, a studio executive saying, why would we spend one penny more to get a viewer that is already watching our show? He's already a fan of the show. He's going to watch the show. Why are we spending a penny more for that person? Which I think is a very short-sighted way of thinking, because, you know, shows come and go and shows only last a certain time, maybe per season. And let's say you have a show that has 12 episodes and then is off the air for close to a year before it comes back. You know, the truth is, it's, we all know it's very hard to get a broad audience, but it's much easier than ever to get a deep audience. And that deep audience will evangelize your property. They will buy a t-shirt if you sell it to them. They'll talk about it. They'll come
and
back.
And surely it's about value multiplication. I mean, if you've got something like the Bourne Identity, and yes, it's already got its dedicated audience, it's like, well, you know, it's like a chef, you know, a good chef, you know, you give that chef a leg of lamb and they'll work out how to make sandwiches out of
it, how to make soup
out of it, how to make, you know, a whole heap of stuff, right down to the bone, you know.
And then I think, you know, there's still this residual idea in Hollywood about ratings and audience size and all that stuff. And rather than thinking of some of these IPs as evergreen properties that, if tended properly, can have very, very long lives. And, you know, when you look at something like a Star Trek, you know, when J.J. Abrams sort of rebooted that franchise, and it made, I don't know, close to $1 billion at the box office, it was something like 40 some years after it was a failed television show on, you know, on CBS. And the reason why that was able to happen is that somebody tended that brand and properly. They made sure that the brand was doled out in a sort of proper way. But a lot of times with, you know, especially in something like a network, they're not in the business of, you know, a network in a traditional sense that sells advertising. Their only source of revenue is selling advertising. So they don't really think about it as a brand that has, you know, they don't care about that. They need your ratings to be at a certain level, and if not, it's not valuable to them.
So, I have a, you know, a part of my vision is I'd like to see, let's call it a core story. You know, and Bourne Identity is a great example because it's something everyone's very familiar with. But I'd love to, instead of transmedia being, you know, so here's the movie and then we make another property, which could be a book or it could be a geolocation challenge or, you know.
Yeah.
But those things are sort of existing in silos, which cover the same, let's call it story concept.
Right.
What I'd love to see is, and this is what we're trying to do, is that you're creating a story that flows through all of those properties. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And that is I think that is the holy grail of sort of transmedia storytelling, is to try to reward people's participation by giving them, but it's sort of like putting the Easter eggs in the right places, you know, allowing them to collect the story and allowing that story to migrate from one platform to another is really, it's incredibly satisfying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in some ways, I think somebody like George Lucas understood this really, whether it was by design or just instinctively, he totally understood this. And one of the examples, I'm going to get some of these details wrong, so if anybody, you know, but the gist of what I'm saying is going to be right. There was after the first Star Wars, and again, forgive me, because I'm not a real Star Wars geek, so I may get some.
Oh, now you've lost everyone.
Yeah, but the idea, I'm enough of a Star Wars geek, but maybe not enough to tell the story properly. But the point of it is, you'll get the gist of it. After the first Star Wars, the action figures came out, and in the store there was Chewbacca and there was Han Solo and there was Princess Leia and there was, you know, and Luke Skywalker. And then there was Boba Fett, right?
And he was cool.
And so, but the audience was like, who the fuck is Boba Fett? Because it wasn't in the movie. Yeah. And it wasn't until the next movie that Boba Fett came out. But what made that Boba Fett so valuable is that you didn't know who it was. And I don't know, it was probably a limited edition, to make it even more. So people bought that thing, not knowing how it fit into the grand scheme of things. Mm. And then sure enough, in the next movie, Boba Fett shows up. And out of, I don't know, let's say there's 500 people in the theater, 15 of those people scream all of a sudden because they went out and bought the Boba Fett action figure. And when you think about how brilliant that was as kind of a transmedia play for exactly what you were saying, where story kind of migrates from one platform to the other. So literally that character was launched as an action figure.
And the other awesome thing about those toys is, I mean, because this was my, this was my era. You know, you would recreate, you know, and you'd create your own scenes, you'd create your own battles, your own scenarios, your own stories. So you literally had the toys, the tools to do that, you know.
Yeah. It's almost like creating a platform for your own fan fiction, right?
Yeah.
Where you can actually create your own stuff. But yeah, that I mean, we, you know, on Heroes, we thought we were inventing the wheel and doing exactly that kind of stuff. We had a character that started on the comics that we had an online comic book that ran concurrent with the show. And we created a character that had powers on this thing. And then sure enough, I don't know, 7 or 8 episodes into the show, she shows up on the show. Hmm. And so for the fans that really knew it, it was enormously satisfying for them because they were like, I know all about that character. I know their backstory. I know everything. And it's hugely rewarding to create this almost participatory nature to being a fan. You know, you get to participate in this. You live inside the story world and the story world lives on multiple platforms and you get to participate in that.
So thank you very much for listening, and don't forget, if you have not yet joined as a bounty hunter, please do.
In fact, why am I saying please do? You should do it. If you don't do it, you're missing out on a lot of fun. We have these online escape rooms, experiences I guarantee you've never seen or even maybe even thought of before. What we're doing is very new, very different. It's a hell of a lot of fun, and it's a continuation of our journey as we go to Kickstarter. Until next time, take care and have fun. Bye-bye.